Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to an edition of the Court of Public Opinion. Thank you for attending this session. It's not something I've done on Blog Talk Radio. This is the first show. I've done the Court of Public Opinion on several occasions. We do also a live one-person operation, and it's for someone who doesn't understand dance movement therapy or music therapy. It's really done in the fashion which we do theater. And to know more about the actors and actresses, you'd have to really get to know us. And what I mean by that is I play all the roles. So when I say us, that's what I mean. I'm playing all the roles. So I might as well be all people to all those. But really what it comes down to, it's abuse trauma therapy. And it's a technique we're learning more about. It's play therapy. It's because of somebody that's been abused severely. They go through a lot, and that would include us. We're abuse survivors, and many times what people misunderstand about abuse survivors is that they take on a lot of different characters. And unfortunately for me, that's in my reality, and it's surviving abuse for me is the backstory. Surviving and living through it is very hard. And if I were to tell you that who you're dealing with right now is my true self, because I pray, because I always ask for Lord's help, but you don't know if you're dealing with me or dealing with the abuse survivor, and that could mean a lot of things. Because after severe trauma and abuse, I had to learn ways to cope. And I learned through therapy, and I've been in therapy for years. And I suffered and suffered and suffered. And there was really no healthy recovery for me. Isolating was the norm. And I don't know why it all became like that, but it started when I was 5. And I was acting out. I'm not quite sure what happened, but I was acting out at 5 years old on my brother. And one of the things, what I don't remember is sexual abuse. I just remember there was something that must have happened because I wouldn't have acted out. And acting out was a way of life at home. And if it would have been caught early, it probably got a lot more help. But I don't know where the acting out started or just started. And home and violence for children who act out, unless you're supervised carefully, which I finally got the help I needed when I was 14, but I was acting out a lot. And I don't know if I was reacting to the environment, but there were a lot of people in and out of my bedroom when I was a little girl. So I don't remember a whole lot of stuff, you know. I just remember what I remember. But I always remember my dad being probably not always there, but not always there. And whoever was in and out of our life, I can only recall, I can't recall anything. That's the thing. The thing is, I was too young to know what happened. So I carried a lot of shame and guilt for years, and abuse was a way of life. And growing up in a home where acting out, hitting, punching, smacking, problems like that, just it's just a way that I would not want anyone to live. And it was really hard to accept. It was really hard to accept. But once I got to the realization that what happened to me, a lot of my problems ended. And I can heal and I can recover. But if you saw all the therapy books I have, the Courage to Heal PTSD book, I didn't know myself to be a child sexual abuse survivor. If anything, if I was, I wouldn't have known it, okay? I wouldn't. I didn't see myself as that at all. But I come to realize that if you go a little further back, I do remember what happened. And I remember acting out on and it really upset me when my brother said that I was acting out. And it's really hard to be the oldest sister and hear your brother tell you you're acting out. It was really hard for me, and have a real hard time with trying to deal with that side of my therapy. So I created this platform for other abuse survivors, and what I'm illustrating to you is that there are a lot of people who have been through therapy or haven't even started therapy. They've probably suffered much more than I did. Mine was more mental, psychological abuse. You know what I mean? It was false imprisonment stuff that happened to me over a period of my life. But if it's done correctly with abuse survivors, falsely imprison them is not the way to go. It does the opposite. And I looked at familiar cases of false imprisonment, J.C. Dugard, false imprisonment case. These are the kids that are held up in homes for years without a normal environment. I would say my situation is like that, but that's the extreme. But anytime kids are isolating or abused, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the family. It could be other things. It could be other factors. And usually some people look at, if you have a lot of children, you need a healthy mom and dad to be able to organize and coordinate things. And one of the things is that it's real easy to tell a mother of six children to make sure she's more coordinated, you know, I mean. And for my parents, there was a lot. It didn't take much for things to overwhelm the home. And why I say the backstory behind Pizzagate, which people might say it doesn't exist, but it does, and it existed because it happened to us. And we know that maybe it's not the story, but it's the story behind the story. And in 1985, my parents had separated, you know, and, you know, things pretty much changed, but it was actually changed for the better because they didn't fight, okay? And that was a great thing because, I don't know, but I don't want to be around anybody that's fighting, hitting, smacking. If you grow up in it, you don't want to be around it. Well, then again, depends if you kiss and make up. So, but for us, my mom innocently, I'm pretty sure because she didn't have a lot of help, if somebody offered my mother, who was already on welfare, and a way of life is food stamps and food bank, and that's the norm, and nobody wants to live this way, but that was the norm. That was the only way. We didn't go out to eat. I mean, there wasn't enough money for that. We were lucky if we had toilet paper. Sometimes I wonder, but no, I'm pretty sure because the way my mom was raised, we did have toilet paper. I'm not saying that, but she's a toilet paper fanatic, by the way. So, anyway, but my mom grew up in a pretty affluent home, so she knew she wanted her kids to have better, like just clothes, the better school, the better prestigious schools. And being as she has six kids by herself right now at that point, I mean, going to a prestigious school sounded like a really great idea. And there was this little program down there called Glenmore Academy, which had, it was in a mansion. And it looked on the outside, it looked very prestigious. Okay, or on that end of it. And there was actually two mansions next to each other. And there was a bunch of things that happened. And before you know it, my mom is leaving. My sister's at a daycare center. And over the years, when you look back at this story, like, why does it matter now? Well, it matters to that parent that's putting their kids in daycare. That's why we're talking about it. Otherwise, I don't need to revisit the past anymore. What I'm saying, because it's really not important to what's going on. The backstory about Pizzagate, that there are programs that are authorized through the state and federal government, and you saw with the Jerry Sandusky case, and this is where a lot of kids have been abused, and we can attest to that. And now, what really happened, that's not for me to really discuss. But there were kids, and the court favors the families. And why are we talking about this? Because families have been wrecked over it. And that's all I really have to say. I really don't know what else to say. And when I think about what other families have been through, the people I've met through this, and I'm talking over a 30-year period of time, you would be surprised how many families who've been affected by their daughter or their niece who was raped by a neighbor. There was one situation where I was actually dating somebody in high school whose niece was raped, and they went and shared some of the property, and they took care of them, their family. That was how they went and confiscated the property and the judge and the county. And I learned that was the way to go. That's how I ended up working for, I believe that was the, I'm trying to remember, so much to remember, but I was working on a detail for a bounty. And that was just, it worked out to be a great thing. And, but why families need the support and why we want you all to recognize that there isn't enough therapy that can fix the harm that has been done. There isn't enough medicines out there. Some people are permanently disabled by this, physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally broken. And there's no guarantee that any of us could have come out of this. There's blackouts on a regular basis, et cetera. And the more we talk about it, I don't think it's really doing us a lot of good. So, and we thought that these programs and ideas were great, but really we need just to live our lives. We need to go back to a world where they accept the truth. And when you hear people debunking this, it's like it makes it that much harder for that person to identify. It's like, wow, what happened to accepting these people? These victims are now the bad guys. I mean, I'm hearing these reporters defend them, and these families are like, why would you defend them? I mean, we watched on the news, and I've seen reporters. It's like they always have an answer for everything. Maybe this time you don't. How can you really, truly understand what a family's been through and sit there in front of my face, debunk it, and tell me it's a credibility issue? We already won our case. It's not a credibility issue. It's whether it's a believability issue. And it seems to me that a lot of people just don't believe it happened. They live in this bubble or they live in this world. I mean, listen, when you send your kids to a daycare center, and nowadays your kids could be sexually molested. And there are teachers and there are good parents that know this. And we have, some people are just stuck on stupid. They don't want to believe it. They're like, oh, no, no, no. Oh, you still love me? No, this is not about love. It's not about using us to coordinate a plan. We need people to start accepting what happened in America and let's move forward. And instead of denying what's out there, because they don't have family resources, and they don't have orphans court, and they don't have judges and attorneys who file these cases and clerks that go around looking for somebody to pin things on, okay? They don't go to the sanitary's office. They don't go down to the recorder's office. They don't file these cases just because we want to ding somebody, okay? You can ask any other child abuse task force, forensics, detectives. This is so grueling on so many people. You have no idea how emotional it is when you walk into a roach-infested home and you see all kinds of debris. I can say this because I was on a bounty in debris detail, and we picked up garbage bags of diapers and things. You know you've been into properties like this. But when you know it had something to do with raping a child, it takes on a whole different meaning. And I have to tell you, anyone that's ever been a detective or walked in, I cannot get those sounds out of my ear. You just don't forget that blood-curdling sound. So when I listen to these people try to pretend like this didn't happen, at least we can say we already won our case. We don't have to prove anything. We're actually just sharing the backstory. Because while I can't identify with that specific story, I can't because I wasn't involved in that. I would not, after what we've been through, we don't want to do anymore, honestly. But when I hear the story Pizzagate, it reminds me of what we went through long before. But it wasn't like what it is here, okay? You got many more people that are arguing whether this Pizzagate thing is real. Well, I want to know what it is about that story that doesn't make it real. What makes that not real? The symbols, I'd like to hear your response. because we want to. We're laying the groundwork for what is going on out there, because they got to change what's going on in Washington, and that's the end of the story. And there's no other way to put it. Now, listen, I don't know. I don't follow politics, so I don't really know what people do down there. I have a pretty good idea, though. Okay, I don't have to pretend. I obviously didn't grow up yesterday, but I think for somebody that's backward or awkward, they want to. They're wrestling with this. They're like, did this happen or did this not? And why I want to leave it there, because while I don't know the real story, I know the backstory. Okay, and somebody went around saying that we promote homosexuality. Well, that's absolutely not the case at all. We deal with people who have been sexually abused and sodomized. Okay, so we have to deal with them where they're at. And what I have a problem with is people who put their religious views and get that involved. We're dealing with people who've been traumatized that way. Okay, so that may be the way they sense. That's the safe thing for them, because that may have something to do with what they've gone through as a survivor and as an abuse victim. I'm going to say this. You got to take the religion out of it for a moment and think about the person. Are you that busy critiquing their work or critiquing them as a person? Because it's not doing any good. It really isn't. It's going to make people are tone deaf. They don't want to hear any more criticism. When you come from an environment that's all you hear is criticism, it's not working. There's a way to talk to people. There's a way to sit down and try to understand what they're going through as individuals. But otherwise, just making generalizations, this doesn't have anything to do with supporting the LGBT community either. This has everything to do with supporting the individuals. You won't see me at the gay pride parade. I'll make sure they know that. But I support them as individuals. Because I know that some of those people that go down to that gay pride parade have been raped by as children, okay? And I can make a good argument for that. But as far as, like, participating in the gay pride parade, you're not going to see me probably going down to the gay pride parade, okay? I mean, there are some things I know I can't do, and I won't do it, okay? It's not because it just isn't that way. But I can't go along with this religiosity. Religion has done enough to... You know what I mean? I have a spiritual program anyway, and I like to think that I pray and I love my Lord, and I love my Jesus. So as far as I'm concerned, I have to wrestle with things that a lot of people don't wrestle with either. I don't have time to sit here and debate, but here's the thing. We do have the court of public opinion, and there will be a time we can discuss it, okay? If you feel that strongly about it, then please email me. But I don't want to get into a habit where people discredit people, because that's what social media is. It can be a wonderful place to go, and it can be an awful. I have to tell you, some people are very uncomfortable in social situations, and the normal person out there is used to socializing one-on-one. But our society is divided, because a lot of times what happens now, it's a lot easier and convenient to socialize on the internet, which I actually enjoy. That's why we spend so much time on there, because we could be doing our other things like watching TV or doing a program, but we actually do radio, and we try to utilize our time properly, and we're getting better. But, you know, in a home environment where we need structure, okay, and we need people to be supportive, the last thing you want to hear is that there's criticism. I don't want to live in a home where everybody's criticizing each other. So I certainly am not going to want to go onto my social page and experience that on my YouTube page. Or, you know, I like going home to a safe environment, and I like to create that on my platform while we talk about the issues, because I notice people are going to disagree. I'm aware that's all that social media does. It's like a sparring match with some of the threads. It's like Mayweather and TKO. True. So I don't know. I like, there's a healthy time. We can't even get people to really discuss the topic, is what I'm saying. I mean, the topic, you can't even talk about because it's already gotten out of the way. Like, but we're trying to give you an example of what is going on there. So instead of debunking me and call me, you know, names like had a credibility issue or whatever. Like, how did I end up here? How did I end up having a credibility issue? And that was from a well-known reporter. I'm like, thanks. I appreciate that. Now I don't have a credibility. You know, at this point, maybe I don't have credibility. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Our case is already closed, so it doesn't matter to me. I'm just saying it's a backstory because in the backdrop, the abuse has been going on. So I don't know what makes any difference if there's whatever the claims are right now, because I don't even touch that story anymore. I don't even go near it. I don't want to. I get exhausted. I get tired. I get burned out. And we have enough of a trauma abuse issues to sort out ourselves anyway. And it's really hard to get the help. The only way we can actually help people is tell them how hard it is to get the real help, how hard it is to get money and funds and programs. So we start our own program. And it just seems to have a way of having a timing. That's why I wanted to do this program, because I realized that there's going to come a time that somebody's going to need this program. And that's why we did it. And I think that if you look at what's going on, and I'm careful to do this because I really want to make sure I report it correctly. And I don't want to be mean to anybody on purpose, at least. I'm not trying to purposely be mean. Really, I'm not. I just know that there's people that need to feel safe again. And if you can't get people to sit down and diffuse an argument, there's probably not going to be any way to have a conversation. You got to get people in a room first. And I was dating this one time with my mom. I said, we got to get people to the table again. I don't know how that happens, but we got to get them to the table. And if they can get to the table, we might actually have a dialogue. I would recommend if they're going to come to the table, bring a pen and a pad and bring a pillow, because you might need to take a few naps in between. We were told we talked too much. But anyway, We're just saying this. I'm laying it out for those people. And when I look at the way we illustrated, like we have a lot of kids, so and nieces and nephews. So we have a jury of our own. And they have opinions, and we appreciate it. You know, we're not trying to run – well, actually, I'm not saying that. We're not trying to run the show here is what I'm saying, but in a way we are. And why we created a court of public opinion, because if you have 12 kids in your family, you have a jury of your own. And somebody's going to play that role. And when I started where I'm going to end it here – and then we're going to start with part two because I got to take a two-second break and get coffee. But a one-person operation is kind of theater, and I have to play every role. And I mean when I say we have 12 kids, it's just we don't know for sure which dad or mom it belongs to. We're still looking for the mother of the children. Anyway, we're running this show, and we are running the show. We're in charge, and my dad said before we passed away we would be in charge, and we are. And he also told us that we would have to tell everybody about the end time prophecy, and we would have to tell them to run to the hills in the Midwest because he believed in the rapture. And we were told that we had to tell our brothers and sisters. So we did. And some people call us crazy, but that was what my dad told us to tell everybody, that the rapture is coming and Jesus is coming. And I just listened to my dad. So I'm just telling you what my dad told me. He told me to make sure everybody knows. You better have water and you have to learn to survive off the land. But otherwise, I had mostly a relatively normal childhood. I played basketball. I was a pom-pom girl. I have a couple friends. I went to college with, I got in trouble. I got grounded a lot, things like that. But when we do family drama and we do court of public opinion, we're doing it. Hopefully, if, I don't know, I haven't gotten far as asking my family. I kind of do things backward. I kind of invite everybody in, and I haven't even told my family about it. But family drama, okay, so theater in the park, this is where my family or whoever shows up, if they're, they don't usually show up, so I don't know how it's going to work out. But family drama we've been called drama. We were called a bunch of names. But if you followed me on Facebook, you see what happens when I'm around my sister. And we have done skits for a long time. And one of the things is that we get the grab bag, and everybody gets a bag, and you have to create theater. And that's what it is. It's just what we've done, and it was a tradition. And our family, I'm not sure they're going to be on board with this because I kind of already volunteered them. But when you talk about family and how we learned to overcome some things, one of the things we overcame it with was theater. And I started radio theater in my brother's basement in North Hills. And I'll show you some pictures at some point. But it's pretty funny. I must admit, you have not seen anyone in rare form until you see some of my brothers and sisters. They are probably the most intelligent, theatrical, dramatic people. We are thespians. I don't know how else to say it. We really are. And that's because we came from a large family and was completely confusing. Okay, it's a hot mess when I say that. So I hope you survived the first part of this because I had to really put it out there. I never want to have to bring this up again. I just know right out of the gate that we have to lay the ground rules, okay? And one of the things about theater is that when you do open mic, we have to have coordinated or we don't do it at all, okay? Because open mic, anything can happen, anything goes. And I would rather just do pre-production and dress rehearsals, and that's kind of what we're looking at. As far as, like, open mic, it's after the program, but most of what you would expect in radio theater, and you saw it just recently in the New York Times, was sponsored up there. That's what we do. We did it long before that ever happened. But we do something that's far different. We do political theater, you know. And, well, I don't know if they know that, but we do. Not sure. I've done this before. I've volunteered people for things, and they didn't know about it. But I mean when I say we'll literally just ask people to show up, and we'll pick volunteers. But radio theater and doing something theater in the park, to me, is basically what we do at the Court of Public Opinion. And doing it on radio is a lot different. So I'm going to take this break, but we're going to start with the first episode of the Court of Public Opinion, where I'm going to play out the role, and you're going to have to appreciate, because there's going to be a voice inflection, and well, I can't do radio theater. Well, that's the whole point. It's radio theaters. And if you know anything about the history of radio in 1940, and this is where it started, and I met a group that was from Vancouver, Canada, and I had interviewed them at 103.3 FM, and we created radio theater. And they do their own form of radio theater, and what ended up happening is we're going to do a little bit more as far as pinup girls and World War II and more current event stuff. There's also one that's called Yesterday's News, and that's a theater. All this is theater. And we can't do it on the radio. I've tried it. I've tried to do memes. I've done posters, but most of what you'll see is at the performances. They're live performances. So what I'm going to do is we're going to leave it here. I'm going to do our first performance, and I hope you just give us a few minutes, and we'll be back, probably in about a couple minutes here. We'll be right back. The Court of Public Opinion is a part of the Amateur Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in to the Court of Public Opinion. We also have a program called Planet Radio, which is really radio, and it's actually coordinated, which now we call Radio Outpost. We had to pull all of our stuff together and coordinate it instead of confusing our YouTube channel. We had to just consolidate everything. So it's called Radio Outpost, and we have a different rotation for different programs, and we're doing several different segments. And once we get a website up and ready, you'll see it makes a little more sense. But I just want to give you a visual of what we're trying to do there and what we will have once we get back on our program. And that won't be until the fall, but right now we're just warming it up and just feeling out and getting ready to do whatever it is we're trying to do. And one of those projects is called Radio Theater. And I created the Moonlight Lounge and the Amateur Radio Network for the purpose of teaching. I was a teacher's aide, but I couldn't find the one program I wanted to do. I really wanted to work with broadcasting. And because I became a broadcaster in Charlotte, North Carolina, but I had started out in radio here in Pittsburgh at 105.9 as a radio intern, I ended up having paralysis and, you know, after I was in the Army for a short time. And it was temporary paralysis, but it was enough to throw my career off. And I had already had job opportunities with a Newark radio station as a morning weather person and also another job opportunity with a weather channel. So to come back to radio to learn how to talk again and walk again and function, I had to learn how to do it again. And I had a lot of voice coaching. It was very hard. But I made it. And people who worked with me when I was going through disability issues because of the paralysis and other problems associated with it, they said, you really shouldn't think about doing radio. You know what? I almost wish I listened to them because I wanted to prove them wrong, and I did. And I proved one thing I will say this. If I had only listened to them, they were probably right. But I did make it. And to what degree, I don't know. Is it worth all this? I don't know. I still haven't gotten the big paycheck. So I don't care about all that. But I do care about the education end of it. And as somebody who considered being an educator, a teacher, I thought, well, that's what I should do. If I all else fails, I'll just be a teacher or an instructor. And I found out that there were places out there where I could get the additional training, where I could not only just be a teacher, but I could maybe specialize in something. In the course of this, though, what I've learned is that I had to coordinate it, and it's still in process. So that's the same with our radio. Everything's just still kind of, we're working out the fine-tuning a lot of things. But my overall point is that there's so many things I'd like to do, and we can only do one thing at a time, and that's called Radio Outpost. And while I'm in school and finishing my program, there are areas I'd like to really consider, like music, frequency therapy, counseling, for that when we deal with abuse trauma victims, or in some cases what we also, well, what I used to have a team, I have a silent partner, more or less. Music therapy was one of them, and it's sound frequency, and it's very successful. Down in Bethesda, Maryland, for somebody that suffered PTSD trauma, is one of the most successful programs at Walter Reed Hospital. So we're using that as one of those models. We're also looking at dance movement therapy. That was the other one. And just because of, you know, things happening, we have not been able to attend the conference. But with those two, plus other methods of therapy, play therapy, we use Vote Judge Barbie, and you'll see it if you want to follow our Court of Public Opinion page, you'll see Vote Barbie 2018, and it's a way we communicate with kids at school assemblies and things like that. So, and there will be people that actually really will be in a position to do the speech work. They actually did the clinical studies. We worked with several therapists in the past, so I'm pretty sure if that's their area of expertise, most likely they're going to be doing the public speaking end of it, or at least advise us on it, okay? But overall, as a teacher, as an instructor, a director in any of these programs, one of the things I know that we're going to come away with is that we can go into a school district today, not today necessarily, but we will be able to go into the school districts, and we will be able to advise teachers and parents on what's going on with the epidemic of child abuse. And we could always train our teachers and parents better on what to look for in a child abuse awareness, because the impact is so great right now, and the outrage is so real. If you even see what's going on with YouTube and how pages are blowing up, Vote is blowing up, and anyone that knows anything about independent research, it is a real They want answers, and they're going to get them because these are parents. And what I think is the best way to go about this is get people into the assemblies, talk to the school district. I just got done talking to the school district, the principal at our high school, and he's from Brooklyn, New York. So, and that's from my high school at Seneca Valley High School. He and I had a long talk about some things about the history of that problem in itself. And the kind of issues they deal with today are far different than the issues we deal with now. Thank God. Well, not thank God, but thank God it's not, we're not going in there with all this expert training. We're going in there learning as well, asking the questions, asking the audience, and doing it through radio theater and doing a presentation on a school assembly is a better way to teach kids how to talk about this, okay? And when we introduce Vote Barbie, there's American Doll, but I don't know if we can do that right away. I mean, there might be some copyright issues. I know we're all about censored news, but all these theater performances and acts are all to teach parents and children to discuss it, or at least break the ice, okay? Instead of critiquing everybody, we need to get on the stage and let some people do theater. And we have a couple acts, and they're entertaining, and they're fun, but the message is about breaking the ice, the parents and kids to talk, and that takes it a step further. The program is called Erica's Kids, initially. And the reason we know is because Erica, who the program's named after, was a caseworker who died in 2002. She was our caseworker, in fact. And she was a professional Pittsburgh. Well, she was a professionally trained Pittsburgh ballerina for the Pittsburgh Ballet Company. And Erica was a caseworker and child abuse forensic expert. And most of her training was in, shaken baby syndrome. When Erica passed away, though, I never thought I'd ever do this. Honestly, it was the only way I could. It was the only way I could cope with her loss, is to just pick up whatever I could and learn what she did. And I was on her caseload, so it just goes to show you that people can do this. I didn't think I could, honestly. It's very hard to tackle this topic. Anyone knows that Erica Harkema, with the help of other therapists at PAC, and she was also a case manager for the child abuse division. She was a case manager as a child abuse expert. And I just messed that up. I'm sorry. She was a therapist, and she was also the case manager at Children's Hospital for that department regarding child abuse. Okay. So if you were to go into emergency room, Erica would be the one that would come down from that department, and she would deal directly with the doctors and nurses. So that was Erica. She was that person. And there aren't too many people that I have ever met that knew Erica can say, and her son and her daughter included, I'm pretty sure if they're anything like their mother, you're gonna be quite impressed with Eric and Elise. And I hope that day comes very soon, because if you imagine what Erica was like, you haven't even met her children. And the reason I say that is that we're going to go the next step, because Erica's kids are all these thousands of kids she saved too. Okay, she has two kids, and we talked her into having a kid, by the way. We told her that it was really, really a good idea that she have kids, but she did. She listened to us, and thank God. But her son Eric and her daughter Elise and her her husband, who I believe he remarried after, I'm not quite sure, I don't want to say that, but I know Elmer would be very proud of what Eric has accomplished here, because believe me, I hope we have the opportunity to introduce Eric and Elise. And I know Elise was going to governor's school at the time, and Eric, I'm not quite sure because he was 8 years old at the time, but I know Elise was enrolled to governor's school, so I'm not quite sure, but If there was one person that would be governor of Pennsylvania, it would be Elise, okay? So without too much going into any more, I want to introduce the last part of the segment. We're going to take a break. We'll be back, and we're going to reintroduce more about the Court of Public Opinion. The Court of Public Opinion is a part of the Amateur Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in to the Court of Public Opinion. Today is July 16, 2017. Thank you for attending a session of the Court of Public Opinion. We're only open for a short time. It is Sunday, but this is a demonstration of what we would like to do in future programs. We laid out the case for why we do this program, but let's get on with the show. When we put together this performance, I want you to understand I play all the rules. I play the character witness. I play the judge. I play the attorney. So I have to change my voice, and I'm learning how to do this better. But improv is a lot harder. This is my way of saying just cut me a break. So without too much more, we're going to take a recess, and then we'll be back. And we're going to take a two-minute coffee break, and we're going to resume here at the Court of Public Opinion. Order in the court. Order in the court. Please have a seat. Welcome to the Court of Public Opinion. Now, the case we're going to be presenting here is docket 13778. And the opening statement by the attorneys on the defense and also the plaintiff. And it's a matter that has been presented to the court and the judge here, the Court of Public Opinion, you being the audience, which we would like to extend our thank you for attending this program, because some of the topics, and this being a very brief topic, this is just the opening statements, and we'll probably only be able to cover some of the first of the opening statement. But we would like to address why it is we're doing the Court of Public Opinion. So if you would give us a moment, and we'll briefly open it up here for that, the plaintiff, we're going to allow them to start with the opening statement. Hi, thank you. I'm very excited to be able to sit in front of all of you. And when I tell you the story about the victim and then the abuser or the accusers, they can both play. They both work. They're both responsible for what's going on. And many of them, they have to take personal responsibility. But this issue that we're presenting here to the Court of Public Opinion is about how to resolve conflict. And they decided they wanted to go before their jury of their peers because they didn't want to continue the fight. They wanted to resolve it. They want to make peace. And they got themselves into trouble in their previous marriage. And resolving conflict, I'm representing the plaintiff and the defendant, believe it or not. And the reason I'm representing both of them, because while each of them has some personal struggles, the one thing is they want to work together, and they want to work together at a different capacity, though. So it's really hard to turn this around. A lot of times, the inevitable happens. Families get divorced, they want to, and then they come back, and they may even consider getting remarried at some point. But that's really not the issue. They just want to resolve their conflict. Now, for the victim, she's lived with a lot of the problems that came as a result of the abuse that happened at home. He has tried to do something to change that. He's gone to therapy. He did exactly what she asked him to do, and he did go ahead and receive the anger management courses now, but their marriage still, well, they did decide to separate. And the whole point to this conflict, which is a conflict within a conflict, is to try to better understand a family who's suffered abuse. They've both been accused of abuse against each other. They both were arrested, and they were both abusing each other. So I don't know who you take sides here on this, because a lot of people like to take sides on abuse. They usually blame the man and to let the women off. But in this case, they both admit they were part of the problem, and they're both willing to talk about it. So that's why we present this case, which is far different from any other cases, because you have to understand every case doesn't get heard quite like this. But we're going to give them an opportunity to address this topic. So I just want to illustrate this is about resolving conflict. I know that might sound really confusing to somebody, but when you have interpersonal struggles in your marriage and people want to make it work, even after they've already done the divorce stuff, they recognize that they need each other still. See, the whole point is both of them agree that they did not want to go through this divorce. For whatever reasons they went through, and I don't understand why people go through a divorce and then end up married again. That doesn't make any sense to me, but that's the kind of people we're dealing with. They really wanted their marriage to work. And I think in a society where welfare says, well, she wouldn't be able to get all that help. She would have to be divorced or single. And one of the things she ran into is that in a lot of these programs, social programs, I believe it's going to change today, but you would have to meet the income requirements. And she has special needs, and he couldn't afford it. So that's probably the problem right there, is he can't afford it. Now, the other problems that stem from it, that's where the counseling, and that's why they have to go through conflict resolution. So there really isn't any way to try to figure this out, but how do you help a couple that just went through a divorce and now they want to get back together? Why are we even here? Because I think what their issue is with the state, and they want to sue the county and the state because they were both, number one, just so that you get a chance to get to know them, they were both foster children in the county system. So they already had strikes against them. Their marriage could not work. They could not follow along with the restrictions and rules that the county welfare system would not allow them. They both had special needs. And in this county, in this state right now, the HR 951 would not allow these two individuals to sue the people that raped and molested them as children. And that's why they're here to present their case, because their divorce was as a result of trauma and abuse. And they ended up taking it out on each other, and they recognized that they need help. And this is how we, as the jury, want to help these two individuals. They are a married couple. They are both orphans. They are both severely abused as children. They found each other and fell in love. But they know they have problems. And not problems that were caused by them. They were caused because of the abuse. And the reason, people don't understand about the county government is they put so many restrictions on the victims that it's already right now still held in as window legislation. It has not gone through. They could not sue the persons that abused them. They can't. And we're telling you right now, that's what we are here to illustrate. The HR 951 here in the state of Pennsylvania would not only help somebody like this, but it would help somebody like in the case of Jerry Sandusky, okay? The victims. Do you realize that they could retry the victims? The victims are not on trial. I don't know how else to explain this to people. I think they have to really try to understand. It's not the victims that wanted to be abused. They're not volunteering for this. Could you imagine walking into a shower stall, watching a large, older man with a little 8-year-old? In the shower? Can you understand? When do we deal with the real injustice? These people are affected for the rest of their life. So I can't understand why it's just window legislation that ask the representatives. This is why we're going to the state. We got to present our case this way. We need you to be the jury on this. The mock trial here. And that's my opening public opinion as a part of the app radio network.